Hello, everyone. I'm recording this after the fact because I actually turned the recorder off rather than on when I gave this talk. It's still a little disorienting using the Zoom universe, but the advantage this time was that I was able to supplement the talk with a little slideshow in honor of Earth Day. We had an Earth Day celebration and meditation this past Wednesday. So I decided to follow up on it by sharing the work of the Chilean artist and poet, Cecilia Vicuña. And so if you're listening to this recording, please take a look. I will attach a PowerPoint slideshow as well. And please watch that as you listen. Vicuña's work is deeply rooted in her connection to the earth, the mountains, and waters. She may never have read Dogen's Mountains and Waters Sutra, although she may have. She has certainly studied Taoist and Buddhist texts. But I have no doubt that she has heard the Dharma of the mountains and waters. Even her surname comes from the mountains. In the Basque language of her distant ancestors, it means mountain goat, Vicuña. But it also conflates with the word Vicuña, I don't know how to pronounce that, in the Quechua language of the Inca people of the Andes. For a long-necked ancestor of the alpaca, now called the Vicuña, it lives high in the Andes and is very shy. Its wool is one of the finest, warmest, and most expensive fibers in the world. Vicuñas were almost hunted to oblivion by the 1960s, but they've made a comeback with strict conservation measures. According to indigenous belief, vicuñas are born at the sources of springs, and the fiber made from their wool is symbolically associated with the thread of running water, the stream of life. Since 1966, an ongoing element of Vicuña's work has been the making of what she calls precarios, small sculptures made of found objects, often litter or garbage, many of which she leaves in place on beaches or streets or sidewalks to be exposed to and altered by the elements. Vicuña's first experience of spontaneously making un precario was when she was just out of high school, at a beach in Chile, which she calls Concon. And this is what she writes. I'm going to read passages from her writings throughout this talk. In her words, "My art was born at the meeting point of two waters, the Aconcagua River and the Pacific Ocean. The first peoples of Chile called it Concon, water, water. Con is the female life force, the ocean, the great mother, transforming herself. From the union of fresh and salt water, a boundless energy emerges, the inversion of separation. Concon was an ancient ritual site, the place of the oracle facing the tallest mountain of the Western Hemisphere, the Aconcagua. Millions of birds used to fly from the Northern Hemisphere to the estuary, where the waters from the glaciers met the sea. No more. Concon is now polluted by an oil refinery built on top of the ancestral cemetery near the beach. Oil erased the cultural memory of the land. The fishermen forgot their poetry and dance, learned from bird rituals, the torn sound, el sonido rajado, of Concon. Without the dance, the sea began to die. As a child, I played on the beach, my hands and feet blackened by oil. One day, I felt the wind encircle my waist like a snake. I turned and realized the sea, the sun, and the wind were aware. Undone by living awareness, I melted to the ground. I picked up a stick and planted it in the sand. El Palito became the Buddha, and I became debris, a basurita on the beach. Undoing completes the doing. High tide erases the work as night becomes day. I call it arte precario. Precarious is what is obtained by prayer, uncertain, exposed to hazards, insecure. Consciousness is the art, awareness aware of itself. You may recall the story from the Blue Cliff Record collection of koans. The Buddha was out walking with members of the Sangha one day when he stopped, pointed at the ground, and said, "This spot is good to build a temple." At that, Indra, the king of the gods, appeared, plucked a blade of grass, stuck it upright in the earth, and said, "The temple is built." And as you remember, the Buddha smiled. Made me think of this when I read of Vicuña as a little girl, or not a little girl, a young woman, placing the little stick, El Palito, in the sand. Each of you has built a temple right where you are today in front of your electronic device. Maybe you also have a flower or a stone on your altar at home. Vicuña writes, "An object is not an object. It is a witness to a relationship." A force impelled me to do the precarios, a desire to expand. They began as a form of communing with the sun and the sea that gave me a lot of pleasure and a lot of strength. Poetry inhabits certain places where the cliffs need only a signal to bring them alive. Two or three lines, a mark, and silence begins to speak. To me, this calls to mind the teachings of Dogen about insentient beings speaking the Dharma, and the verse he quotes from Dongshan. "How splendid, how wondrous, inconceivable, insentient beings speak Dharma. The eyes never hear it." Sorry, I misread. "The ears never hear it, only the eyes do." The eyes here doesn't refer to our anatomical eyes only, but to all our senses, our whole body and mind, open, receptive, responsive. This is how we hear the Dharma of insentient beings. Vicuña also refers to her precarious works as basuritas. Basura in Spanish is garbage, refuse, detritus, and the suffix ita is a diminutive indicating smallness, like señorita, or by extension, fondness and affection, as in pobrecita, poor little one. So basuritas are little bits of garbage, detritus, tossed up on a beach by the waves or caught in the drain at a roadside. Here, from Vicuña again. Basuritas del fin del mundo. How to translate basuritas del fin del mundo? Debris at the end of the world? But el fin del mundo, is it a place? Tierra del fuego? Or a time? For the Yaqui, a place is a state of mind. And a phrase is a spirit. Or a breath shape, caught in midair. We are the basuritas, the throwaways of this world. Restos abandonados, abandoned remains, cositas, debris, naditas, little nothings, porquerias, bits of crap. I was drawn to Vicuña's work again. I discovered it years ago. But when I noticed, I was using the word precarious recently to describe the times we are living in now during the COVID-19 pandemic. When you hear the word precarious, what do you think? Unstable, insecure. Maybe you think of someone walking along the edge of a cliff or a high mountain ridge or walking a high wire. Remember earlier this year, we did a Wednesday evening Dharma seminar on Roshi Joan Halifax's book, Practicing on the Edge, or sorry, Standing on the Edge. We called the Dharma seminar Practicing on the Edge. Roshi Joan calls them edge states that feel precarious. We want to reach out for something to hold us steady. But life is inherently precarious because it's impermanent. The art critic Lucy Lippard, writing about Vicuña, says, "Precariousness is increasingly a description of human life on the planet, and precariousness is Vicuña's element. Her art balances on the literal or liminal edge where land and water meet. Places like New Orleans, where the devastation by Hurricane Katrina and the BP Gulf oil spill 5 years later is ongoing. Human life on Earth has always been precarious, as has all life, but maybe what's different now is the sheer scale of the precarity. Vicuña points out that the root of the word precarious comes from the Latin precarius, to obtain by entreaty or prayer. She emphasizes reciprocity, a call and response between the materials and herself. She says, "These materials are lying down, and I respond by standing them up. The gods created us, and we have to respond to the gods. There will only be equality when there is reciprocity." The root of the word respond is to offer again, to receive something and to offer it back. This calls to mind the importance of gift-giving and receiving in many indigenous cultures, and also the lines from the Zen meal chant before we serve food. May we realize the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. And of course, emptiness here means the boundless interconnection of the beings who nourish us as food, those who grow the food, cook it, serve it, and eat it. Vicuña believes her work to be implicitly and at times explicitly political. She went to England as a student in 1972 and became an exile there a year later when the government of Salvador Allende fell to Pinochet in a coup. Vicuña was from a political family, privileged and educated. Her father was a lawyer, her grandfather a personal friend of Allende. Her political consciousness was part of her family heritage, but she was also deeply influenced by her connection to the land and the sea, growing up roaming freely in the countryside, and in her teens, reading Taoist and Buddhist philosophy. In an interview, she said, looking back, "I felt that this social movement was only interested in what was called at the time class struggle. But for me, I felt that it was necessary to have a complete change of being or way of being. Otherwise, it would make no sense. A true revolution would have to be a revolution of the senses, a revolution of the body, a revolution of the way we loved each other, the way we compose our poetry, our music. That would be total transformation." And isn't that what our practice is? A profound and radical total transformation. Vicuña left London in 1975 and lived in Bogota, Colombia for 5 years. working with indigenous people there and making art, political art. For her, it was homecoming to the land of the Americas. After that, she moved to New York and has lived in the States ever since, though continuing to travel back to Chile. She says, we need to respond to the environment the way it responds to us. Everything we do mirrors and reflects us. The water wants to be heard. Everything is falling apart because of lack of connections. Weaving is the connection that is missing, the connection between people and themselves, people and nature. Vicuña uses fibers in much of her work to make those connections, referencing the ancient relationship between wool, spun and woven, and the Andean people. Another recurring image in her work is the quipu. Let me read you this description. Quipu, which means knot in Quechua, are knotted textile record-keeping devices historically used in the region of Andean South America, consisting of colored, spun, and plied thread or strings. The quipu recorded tax obligations, census data, calendrical information, as well as music, poems, and historical narratives encoded by knots in a base 10 positional system. In base 10 positional systems not yet deciphered. The oldest archaeological quipu is dated to 4600 BCE. Quipus reached their peak during the Inca era and were still in use after the conquest of Peru, but the Catholic Church prohibited them in 1583. Does that sound familiar to anyone who knows the history of Church prohibition of indigenous customs here in the Pacific Northwest, prohibiting, outlawing potlatch practices? Vicuña sees both her work with materials and with words as making quipus, knots, connections, weaving, entwining. In her words, all weavers see a universe between thread and thread. As a child, I looked at grains of sand against the sun, their crystal prisms alive with light. In time, I began to see opaque little balls with no light, plastic beads disguised as sand, tiny pellets entering our bloodstream and the life of the sea. Some of her quipus have been on a grand scale. As you can see in the slideshow, if you see the one of the mountain, she writes, participatory democracy vanished in Chile on September 11, 1973, when the presidential palace in Santiago was bombarded in a military coup engineered by the CIA to install a junta that tortured and disappeared people for 17 years. Years later, after democracy was semi-restored, on election day, January 2006, I climbed El Plomo Glacier to place my vote, a menstrual quipu, on the mountain for the president to remember the union of water and blood. But she did not hear, and the glaciers are still being destroyed. I placed a red thread, the wound of the land and the people, at the palace door. Even glaciers are precarious in these times. Let me read you a poem Vicuña has written about her arte precario. When I said arte precario, an energy was born. The two words transformed each other. Doing, ars, became prayer, praesis, and prayer, doing. The precarious was transformation. Prayer is change. The dangerous instant of transmutation. To name a work for its dissolution responds to an ancient vision. The path of the planets, the sun and the moon, is named for their disappearance, ecliptic. Quagiut string figures receive names from their patterns of dissolution in the hand. In the Andes, leftovers are collected in order to throw out evil. The knots are changes, and exchange generates the cure. Continuity in obliteration. In death, resurrection. Debris, a past to come. What we say about ourselves. An object is not an object. It is the witness to a relationship. A thread is not a thread, but a thousand tiny fibers entwined. The word, unraveling in the air, begins again. The warp is the arm and the weft is the world. The city is the book and our gestures in it, the writing. If art is the form of perception, a way of seeing and hearing, perhaps consciousness to join and to cut. The double movement of the weaver is the art. El con de la continuidad. The together of union. We are in continuous relationship with all beings, those we call sentient and those we call insentient. Our words and our actions are the threads of those relationships woven in a vast net. We might make art with our hands, or our voices, with our imagination, or the way we interact with our family, neighbors, and work colleagues, or with the way we do the everyday work of our daily lives. The con of continuity, el con de la continuidad, that con and the com of compassion are the with and for all beings. I'll read you one more passage from Vicuña. The quipu that remembers nothing, an empty cord, the heart of memory, the earth listening to us. The ear is a spiral to hear, a sound within, an empty furrow to receive, a standing stick to speak. Piercing earth and sky, the sign begins to write from below, seeing the efface. The tide erased the work as night completes the day. So please go forth and make precarious art in these precarious times. Make precarious art with your lives. Many people have been doing that in various creative ways, in online communities. And before we started our practice, the Sunday that I gave this talk, I was sitting at the at our sunroom table, instead of getting ready to drive into Vancouver as usual. And I happened to turn on a Metropolitan Opera online gala performance by some 30 to 40 world-class opera stars. And I heard an incredibly, and this was all online performed from people's homes, and heard an incredibly moving performance by the viola section of the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, the viola, in memory of their principal violist who had died of COVID-19. Showed a photo of him. He looked to be a man, maybe late 40s or 50, early, very early 50s, of Italian heritage, and he looked to me to be a man full of joy. Full of joy. And the viola section played this piece, and it was sung by Joyce DiNonato, an American mezzo-soprano. And it was such a beautiful piece of music, it really brought tears to my eyes. They all looked very, very sad as they played it. So I had to look it up. It's called Ombra Mai Fu. Also the Largo from Xerxes by Handel. And I found the words. It's an aria sung with the words addressing a tree. So somehow this felt like part of this Earth Day week to me. So I wanted to read you the words to the song. It's to a plane tree. I think plane trees are Mediterranean or Northern African trees. I don't think they grow here. It goes like this. Tender and beautiful fronds of my beloved plane tree, let fate smile upon you. May thunder, lightning, and storms never disturb your dear peace, nor may you by blowing winds be profaned. Never was a shade of any plant dearer and more lovely or more sweet. So perhaps as part of your precarious art, you might make a poem to a tree, or even just a haiku. So I'll close with that, and thank you for listening to my post-recording of this talk. Be well, be safe, and be kind. Be well, be calm. Be safe, be calm, and be kind. Those are the words that our provincial health officer, Dr. Bonnie Henry, uses at the close of her daily briefings. She has been such a bodhisattva, I really feel, during these times. Her calm and compassionate, clear words every day of strong leadership. She always closes with be safe, be calm, be kind. Thank you.